Lucas Duda, if he's healthy, will play, he'll hit, and he'll walk, which, you know, I'm not quite the apologist you are, but I'll say I am a believer, and as, you know, as Green Man on Twitter says, Lucas Duda is good.
Welcome to episode 126 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell of BP, and I'm joined by my usual co-hosts, Brett Sayer, BP's managing editor, and Mike Gianella of the BP fantasy team. Gentlemen, it's good to have you back. I hope you had a great time in New York. How's everybody doing?
Good. We're slowly recovering from the weekend, but good.
Yeah, I actually was sick and had to leave Foley's like really early, so I punked out. But I'm finally, you'll hear a little bit of my voice, but I'm finally starting to feel a little better. So,
well, I won't ask you to relive the events that happened at Foley's; those remain lost to time. But the actual draft was at a new location this year, and I was talking a little bit with Mike about this, that it was interesting. It was sort of a new dynamic to the draft, so. What did you guys think of the new venue this year?
I thought it was fine. I think I don't know what the environment was like when Mike was there. I wasn't at his auction, but we drafted sort of in the open area starting at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday. So my guess is that it was a little bit rowdier in the bar in general when we were drafting. But I thought the setup was fine. I mean, it'd be a little bit easier in a separate room, but you know, I ended up being able to hear everything. I was straining to hear Jeff when he was reading out the reserve picks, but I think by that point it was like 7 o'clock and everyone was in the height of the college basketball tournament.
Yeah, we ran into that a little bit at the end of our auction or the second half, but it, you know, the pros are it was really close to Foley's and really close to Penn Station, so very accessible. The fantasy TV studios were right there, although if you guys are listening, you feel free to invite me on next time. I'd be glad to come on and talk a little bit. It nice place, you know, nice view outside, although the deck wasn't open because it's a little bit too cold for that. But I you know, just want to emphasize as much as the noise was inconvenient, you know, they did a really good job, you know, putting everything together as they always do. And, you know, to be mildly or at worst moderately inconvenienced didn't really matter. And I think everybody, once we got past the noise, like, did fine.
Yeah. So yep. Brett and Mike are back from New York City from Tout Wars, and that's what we're going to talk about on today's show. So Brett drafted in the Tout Mixed, and Mike drafted in the NL side, the NL-only Tout. So we're going to discuss those drafts, and we're going to start off with Brett's. But first, a little bit of housekeeping. You can read all of us at baseballprospectus.com. Sign up for a premium membership. Get access to all of our great content. The season starts in, like, I don't know, 3 days, so get on that. You can follow us on Twitter. I am at George Bissell. That's with two S's and two L's. Brett is at Brett Sayer BP, and Mike is at Mike Gianella. Don't forget, subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. If you love the show, feel free to drop us a review. Leave us a rating. Each one helps us out tremendously, so thank you in advance for doing that. So let's dive right into the draft here for Brett. Brett, first of all, let me say thank you for picking Danny Valencia. It made my day, and I like your team overall.
It's 2 years running I got Danny Valencia.
He's pretty good.
He's a nice end game option, yeah. I was going to say, I mean, when I first put together my bids, I had him as a reserve pick because I still thought Vogelbach might win that job against right-handed pitching, but I mean, once he got demoted, that changed in a hurry. I mean, I think I think he's going to play, and you know, we know he can hit when he plays. We'll see if that opportunity sustains itself.
Yeah, I mean, he's just kind of held his own against righties the last 2 years, but we know he can do against left-handed pitching, so that's a bonus. Mike, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to tee this off. So, you know, I noticed this in the NL, and you noticed this in the mix. So I know it's only your second year in the mixed auction in Tout, Brett, so it's not like me in the NL where you kind of see trends, you're in, you're out. But what I found in the NL is that it's fairly unpredictable from year to year. Like, there isn't like a hierarchy where the top players go for a certain amount and then the middle players go for another amount and then the pitchers go for a third amount. And you noticed that right off the bat, it looks like. It looked like right away, you know, you kind of had a plan or an idea where you're like, I might get Mike Trout, I might get Paul Goldschmidt. But, you know, it wasn't just them. It sounds like there were more than a few players where that didn't happen. So I wanted to ask you, you know, one, were you surprised by that? And two, you know, did you adjust pretty quickly to that reality?
It was a little surprising, but you know, in the end, it played out. I don't think it played out that dissimilarly to how I thought. I think the top end got a little exaggerated beyond where I thought it would be. And not to say those are bad, you know, purchases. I mean, I you could absolutely make the argument that $51 is the right price for Mike Trout in an OBP mixed league.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you saw the people that were available at the end of the draft in the dollar day phase. So, you know, it's certainly arguable. You know, I just kind of noticed at that point that there was one of two things was going to happen. Once the first five or so players were off the board and I knew we were going to be throwing around money a little bit more aggressively than I had probably anticipated going in, I figured either I would kind of sit on the sidelines a little bit for the first, you know, round or two and then buy a whole slew of sort of $25 to $35 players, or I was going to just figure out who fell into my sort of value zone and just pick them off as they came up. And it ended up being the latter. I really didn't have to wait very long to start adding players to my offense. But, you know, I just thought there was I thought some of the price dislocations early were kind of curious. And I'm curious to get Mike, I'm curious to get your thoughts on it, because I wrote about this in the article. I saw it. The thing that interested me most was the difference between what Manny Machado went for and what Carlos Correa and Corey Seager went for. You know, from your perspective, how close are the three of them in an OBP format? And, you know, do the prices that they ended up going for make sense to you?
No, I read what you said, and I kind of, I think I agree with you. Like, I was a little surprised, and you know, I know that Machado is more established and there's some reliability baked into his price. So that I get, but you know, as much as Carlos Correa, you know, he had that one half a season or two thirds of a season where he was great. And then last year he was disappointing, but, you know, he's disappointing in a way where you look at what he did and you're like, well, yeah, you know, and you pointed this out, Brett, like he's still really good. So, you know, and Trey Turner's another one now, you know, interestingly in NL Tout, we can talk about this when, you know, we get to me, but you know, Trey Turner had the usual thing I've kind of seen in every auction except for NL Tout, where people are just paying this full amount for him. And you know, I hate comps, but from a valuation comp, Turner is what Correa was last year, where people are just paying, assuming like you're going to just blow up what he did in a, you know, a third of a season. And we know it doesn't work that way. So yeah, I really like the Correa price. You know, I kind of look at your team, you know, and this sort of ties into, you know, it goes back to Trout, some of these other guys. Mixed prices aren't as doctrinaire. You know, I put out these mixed bid recommendations along with the NL and AL only, and all the writers do a model portfolio. You know, I don't do it because, you know, I put out the bids, and they try to take those bids of mine and construct the perfect team. Well, what winds up happening in a mixed auction, and, you know, Brett, I think this is what happened to you, is that people aren't really looking at value. Now, I know in AL and NL, people aren't looking at value, but my whole philosophy is, well, if you don't look at value in an AL or NL only, it's to your detriment because you wind up overpaying or you wind up chasing a guy. But in mix, there's some wiggle room to do that. Like, you can't pay 65 for Mike Trout because in a 15-team mix, they'll put you in a bad position. But yeah, you can pay 50, you can pay 51, maybe you can pay 53 for him, and it won't really impact you. So to get back to your question on Machado, I think there's some of that. I think people are chasing a certainty and chasing a guy that they want. But all that being said, you know, when you look at your core, that's something I kind of like about your team. Like, looking at, you know, Mookie Betts at 42, Carlos Correa at 33, Corey Seager at 27, Kyle Schwarber at 27, George Springer at 26, and Steven Strasburg at 19. With the possible exception of Schwarber, and, you know, again, this is OBP, I think you got discounts in all those guys.
Yeah, I was a little surprised. I mean, this is not the group of players who I certainly would have guessed that I'd have ended up with. I mean, you would think that they're players that would sort of excite any group of auctioners. You know, you'd have a bunch of young, you know, Springer is not as young as you think he is, but a bunch of young players with some sort of track record and really big upside. And, you know, I thought it was really curious that the spending was higher on the veterans than it was on the younger players, not from a pure dollar standpoint, but from a, you know, from a comparative standpoint.
Yeah. I want to take a step back to your core, because you know, in the article you mentioned you had a 5-point plan. And, you know, so the first part was to play the par game with the big time hitters. So, you know, the hitters you got, the ones I mentioned, do you feel like, even though they weren't necessarily, you know, the big time guys, with the exception of Betts, do you feel satisfied with that group as a core?
Yeah, I mean, I think all five of those hitters are top 25 guys in OBP formats, and you can make the Schwarber argument. I think that his ability to get on base is being a little bit underrated. I think the fact that he's going to get a whole bunch of at bats and hit first in that lineup and score a bunch of runs is also being slightly overrated. I mean, obviously there's the coming back from injury risk, and, you know, he's not going to be someone who gets 700 plate appearances, but, you know, if he was going to get 700 plate appearances, I think you could make the argument for him as a top 10 hitter in this format. He is a special hitter, and I think we're really going to see that this year.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue with that in terms of the ceiling, without a doubt. And, you know, to clarify, when I say that of those guys, I don't like him, it doesn't mean I think, oh, you know, you made a terrible buy. It just means that you're higher on him than I do. I still believe that, you know, at worst, you know, he's a couple dollars overvalued at what you got him at. You know, he's not a bust. I mean, he's not somebody I think you're crazy for chasing.
Yeah, so just to jump in real quickly, if you're following along listening to this show, you can read Brett's recap, which is what we're going off of right now. It is gigantic. It has a lot of information, a lot of these strategic angles in here as well, so you can read that. It's up at BP right now. And just to transition to your next sort of block of players, Brett, your two best values, I think, among hitters were Odubel Herrera and Justin Turner. A pair of guys that I really like, and we seem to talk about this theme a lot throughout the years, that they're guys their value has sort of risen exponentially very quickly, and people haven't adjusted and changed their sort of baseline perception of who they are as hitters. And that's why you're able to maybe get them at a few dollars less than what you had for a bid limit. So were you surprised, and how excited were you to get Herrera and Turner for what they went for, which was $14 and $12 respectively?
I was pretty excited. I kind of, you know, I don't target specific players going into an auction, but when you're in the middle of an auction and you get to the point where teams are starting to spend their money, and you know, I had kind of spent big early and then kind of sat back for a little bit as other teams spent, you can kind of see where you think those next bargains are going to come. And you know, both Turner and Herrera were guys that I had my eye on that hadn't come out at that point, where you know, I had seen similar players from an overall valuation standpoint come out, players who I like a little bit less than that combination, and the pricing seemed like it was going to be, you know, it was going to be well suited for me to grab them. You know, Herrera, I don't get why Herrera is not more well respected in fantasy leagues. He's just a really good hitter. He got on base at a 360 clip last year. He stole 25 bases. I knew I was going to need a little bit more speed as the auction went on, and he was a nice place to grab it. He's a true five category player, and you know, while he might not have too many runs batted in, there's certainly the potential for him to contribute at a level that's not too far below the big studs that I have.
He's like a lesser version of Mookie Betts, really, if you think about it, with less power and maybe a little less average.
Well, that's why I put that in the article. I mean, yeah. it's kind of true. I mean, you don't want to. He's not Mookie Betts. I mean, we're not going to be hyperbolic about it. But it's a similar skill set with less power and less counting stats, and it's really useful. You know, and Justin Turner, his on base percentage was a little bit lower last year, but I mean his on base percentages in 2014 and 2015 were 404 and 370, and he almost hit 30 home runs last year. So, you know, there are a lot of ways that Justin Turner can earn $12, and there are ways that he could earn $20. You know, I really like him as a solid middle of the order home run RBI bat.
Yeah, that's my favorite pick probably.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little difficult to identify bargains in a mix for some of the reasons I mentioned, but both Herrera and Turner, particularly Herrera, you know, I get to see him here, you know, in Philadelphia or in the suburbs every day when I'm watching them. I'm really high on him as well. So I want to kind of move to another one of your goals a little bit. So you wanted to grab an ace, and I mentioned Strasburg, and you know, you wanted to grab a top 10 closer. So I have a two-part question here. One, do you feel Strasburg fits the mold of an ace? And two, you know, were you able to grab that top 10 closer? If not, what did you do?
Strasburg kind of stretches the definition of what I'd call an ace. In a 15 team league, I would consider him an ace. And you know, I'm certainly not the world's biggest Steven Strasburg backer, as you guys know, but you know, comparatively to the other pitchers that I had similarly valued sort of in that back end ace-ish range, he was the only one that went for under $20. And you know, I know there is injury risk, and there's a little bit of performance risk, even though I'm really not concerned about the performance risk. But for $19, you can't. It's really tough to beat that kind of potential, and you know, with the amount I saved on getting that frontline starter and the amount I saved on not getting the frontline closer, which I'll get to in a second, I was able to I was able to spend a little bit more money on the middle of my pitching staff than I think I would have otherwise, even though it was still kind of single digits all around. For the closers, I had a couple of guys that I've generally been targeting this year. I've generally ended up with some combination of Zach Britton, Sung Won Oh, and Cody Allen, but all of them closers were surprisingly expensive throughout the first half of the draft, and then the prices really started to come down once I think the people who were more aggressive kind of got their fill. So I spent $9 combined on Fernando Rodney and Cam Bedrosian, and yes, it's sort of scraping the bottom of the barrel of the closer bucket, but this is similar to what I did last year. I mean, last year I came out of the draft with Santiago Casilla and Roberto Osuna, and both of them were single digit guys, and it ended up working out reasonably well last year. So
yeah, and the other point, we know this from when we were together in labor mixed spread, is that honestly, even in an only league, you can find closers. In a 15 team mix, guys that aren't even on reserve just pop up and wind up getting saves. So I like Bedrosian. The more I look at him, the more I kind of feel bad I didn't get him in labor, where he went for eight. And you backed him up in the reserve phase with Houston Street too. So even if for some reason Mike Socha does the usual, I've got to go with the veteran with the contract thing, you've got the saves there. And Rodney is what he is, but your point is dead on. Like, I had Casilla and Altuve last year, and a number of people said, oh, the skills aren't there, he's going to lose the job. And he held the job almost all year. So you just never know with closers. And, given the prices, I'm kind of fine with what you did. I like the idea of just spending, $9 on these two guys and marshaling your resources elsewhere. So, speaking of that, your staff behind Strasburg. So you bought a couple of guys, you bought a few guys here who are all players. Well, I don't want to say this is true for all of them, but you bought three pitchers who in an only I might be reluctant to push, and I'm not the biggest fan of, but in a mix I really like. Michael Pineda at seven, John Gray at four, and Matt Harvey at three. All three of them are, and Harvey at three especially, but all three of them are these upside guys where if they work out, they could, Harvey in particular, they could be as good, I don't want to say as good as Strasburg, but they could be solid number twos right behind him. And if they don't, it's a mixed, and you can kind of churn and work through that. So I just want to ask about these three. What was your, and John Lackey too, what was your thinking about these four? I know you don't want to spend, more than 50 or 55 on your staff. Were you happy with the pitchers that you put together in Tout?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't intend to spend this little on my pitching staff again. I kind of ended up doing exactly what I did last year overall. But, it's not something you can really look at in an additive fashion. But, if you want to be very simplistic about it, I mean, Pineda, Gray, and Harvey, I spent a combined $14 on them. I feel pretty confident that one of them is going to end up being a $15 pitcher. Do I know which one? No. Does it matter which one? Not really. I can backfill with guys on the waiver wire for the ones that don't work out. And Strasburg, so long as he's healthy, should be able to provide me a solid base of ratios and strikeouts to build on. And, that's part of the reason why I went with Lackey too, is Lackey, I think is just kind of consistent everywhere. It's a little bit more reliability behind those other, more risky arms.
And you went with a lot of strikeout potential. I mean, not only with these guys, but with Carlos Rodon, who you got for a buck, even Patrick Corbin, who, you got a two in the end game, you got a lot of players. I believe in mixed as opposed to an only, where you want to get some stability. Mixed is where, outside of those aces or near aces, it's really better to play the flyers.
Yeah. And, this is one of the things I wrote in the column that I really noticed about last year, is that, playing you know, playing in a mixed, you kind of in the rising strikeout environment, it's easy to kind of get left behind if you don't have enough strikeout potential. And that was one thing I wanted to make sure I did a better job of doing this year, because last year the pitchers, you know, some of the pitchers that I drafted last year ended up working out okay, but they were not big strikeout guys, and it left me in a hole. I ended up just not being able to climb out of on the waiver wire, because you can pick up guys that have good matchups, and you can help your ratios a little bit, but it's really hard to start making up ground and strikeout and mixed as the season goes on.
We've had that problem. We had the problem in labor our rookie year, and even in an only, but in mixed especially, if you dig a hole in strikeouts, you're just knocking it out of it. So you did not buy Yasmani Grandal.
I was sad about that.
I saw your raw bid on him, and I was surprised that you didn't get him. But you got Evan Gattis at 10, and you got Travis Sterno at 3. And just to remind everybody, this is a two-catcher league. So, you know, it's not like, you know, I think Darno in a one-catcher league would be silly. But, you know, in a two-catcher league, you got two guys who, you know, most definitely could provide you with, you know, Gattis in particular, quite a bit of stats.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think Gattis gets overlooked, you know, because there's concern about how much he is going to play. And, you know, while for a lot of other positions, that's a fair concern, you know, I think with Gattis, it's kind of overblown. I mean, I think he's, you know, barring injury, I think he's a lock for, you know, about 350 plate appearances. And, you know, that might not seem overly impressive. That might not seem like a ton, but one, we're talking about a catcher and someone who isn't going to be playing catcher as much as some of the other guys at the position. And two, we're talking about someone who, you know, just came off a season where he hit 22 home runs in 329 plate appearances, against left-handed pitching. Evan Gattis last year hit 288 with 10 home runs in 170 plate appearances. He hits lefties really well. He's going to play against all lefties. He really doesn't have to do much against righties to build $10 in value in catching. I mean, catcher is just awful. I mean, you look at the guys that were taken for a buck or two. There's maybe a couple of guys that you could really kind of squint and be okay with, but you're talking about coming away with like Tony Walters or Sandy Leone or Jet Bandy. I mean, I don't even know if Bandy got purchased, but I mean, it's Jeff Bandy.
No, I'm looking at some of these catchers, and it was really, you know, really ugly. Like of the low end guys, like, you know, maybe just because he's in Colorado and could get healthy and could be disabled, I like Tom Murphy at a buck. But Chris Iannetta was drafted at a buck in a 15 team mixed league, which to me tells you, and I'm not knocking Derek Van Riper, you know, Derek's very good at this, but it's more a testament to how tough it is to find those catchers. Yeah, and you know, we both like Darno. You know, I know George, you've grown a little bit at this, but you know, Travis Darno, when he's healthy and when he's on, I know these are big ifs, he's been really good. So yeah, I like the catchers.
He can't throw anyone out, but as long as he hits, well, it's not gonna be a problem.
Yeah, he can't catch Thor, which is a bit of a drawback, but
yeah, a little bit.
just a bit. So the final thing, just on the general roster, I like the hitters. I kind of have this philosophy in mixed, and you alluded to this before, Brett, where the veterans went for a little bit more than the rookies. But even in a 15 team mix and in a redraft, I like pushing more for players who have done it before as upside plays. And you got three of those guys. Well, George mentioned Valencia, but beyond that, you got Yasiel Puig at 3, Shin-Soo Choo at 2, and Lucas Duda at 2. And these are three players who have looked good this spring. We know they've done it before. You know, for Duda and Chu, and, you know, Puig to some degree, it's health. But these are the kind of upside moves I like. You know, these are all three players who, even in a mix, could earn 15 to 20. You know, on, obviously your raw value is more conservative, which is logical, but there's a lot of potential for your offense, even if two of these guys, you know, bounce back, to really perform and to pop up to a level where you have one of the best offenses in the league.
Yeah, I mean, Puig is kind of impossible to figure out, but, you know, he does have a history of getting on base and kind of contributing all around. I mean, Chu last year, I mean, he only played in 48 games, but he had a 357 on base and 7 home runs and stole 6 bases. So, you know, it's even if he, you know, he doesn't even have to, he could hit exactly like he hit last year, which a lot of people would probably think was disappointing, and still earn $15 in a league like this. And then there's Duda. I am certainly on record being a Lucas Duda apologist this preseason, but man, in an on-base format, he in 2014 and 2015 before his injury, both of those years, he was right around a 350 on base with 30 home runs. And, you know, he's, by all accounts, he's feeling healthy and feeling good. And, you know, that's really all you can ask for. He's not going to, he might not start hitting in a prominent spot in that lineup, but if he hits like Lucas Duda for a month, he'll be hitting right in the middle of the Mets lineup pretty soon. So, It's not like there's too many people stopping him. What, is Jay Bruce going to get in his way?
Lucas Duda, if he's healthy, will play, he'll hit, and he'll walk, which, you know, I'm not quite the apologist you are, but I'll say I am a believer, and as, you know, as Green Man on Twitter says, Lucas Duda is good.
He is. He's so. Very good.
The pick I liked the most was Yangervis Solarte for $5. I mean,
actually, that's who I was going to mention. So
yeah, we didn't bring him up yet, but he was the end game. Obviously, I love Danny Valencia, but Yangervis Solarte last year, obviously he missed time with the personal tragedy in his life. But when he was on the field, you know, 443 plate appearances, hit .286, .341 on base, which matters in this format, and also had 15 home runs. And the counting stats were pretty decent too. So we talked a lot about the depth at second base throughout the offseason, but to get him this late in the draft and to be able to plug him in around the rest of the superstars you've accrued, I thought that was one of the better picks I liked.
He was my guy at the end. That was he was the guy I had circled once I knew I was going to, once there were three spots left and I knew I was going to get my pick of sort of the last three guys. You know, it was Duda, Valencia, and Solarte, who were the last three guys I grabbed, I believe. But you know, he's going to hit in a nice spot in that lineup, and he's just a good hitter. He qualifies at second and third. He's a good guy to have around. I think, you know, the $5 is a little misrepresentative, just because I threw him out for $5, since that was what I had left. But you know, I don't think anyone would have said two on him if I threw him out for $1 at that point.
And is Mix like the onlys where you know if he gets hurt, you can get the reclaim back on yep. your fab? Yeah. So sure. You know, just to explain to our listeners, you know, that it's tout. There's no reason to leave money on the table because you can get a reclaim. So your reserves, you know, we've talked probably about Yolesky Gurriel a million times on the show, so we don't need to rehash how much everybody loves him, but, you know, he's a nice hedge for, you know, the corners you just mentioned. Did you have you mentioned some of the article, did you have a reserve strategy, like, coming in?
I had sort of a strategy coming in that I knew I was going to pay a little bit more attention to my roster when I was picking the reserves than I did last year, just because I thought there would be enough players that I liked so I could kind of tailor it to what I needed the most out of the gate. And I did that. I mean, I knew I wanted to grab four pitchers, and grabbing a, you know, I knew I wanted to grab a corner guy, you know, catcher was a little bit of a luxury, and I like grabbing Swihart with the last pick, just because I think he's gonna, I think he's gonna be back up and catching for the Red Sox by June 1st.
You called him my dear Swihart in the article, which I thought was hilarious.
I did. I took some kind of some of my personal favorites. I wanted Street to back up Bedrosian. I will never quit Jaime Garcia until he retires. I really like Cody Reed as sort of a back end breakout candidate, and I was really sad to see he's not going to start the year in the rotation, which kind of sets me back a little bit. Yeah. But you know, I'll probably just cut James Shields. I mean, because so, really, it's Scott James Feldman Shields. I wanted another arm, and I you know, I know he's going to start out of the gate, and he's probably going to be terrible, but. You know, I have kicked myself too many times for ignoring veterans coming off bad years who are having bad spring trainings, because veterans just do not give a about spring training, or at least about results in spring training. So, you know, would it completely shock me if Shields came out and was, you know, a perfectly usable back end starter this year? It would not surprise me, but he will probably not be on my roster.
Well, and, you know, looking at the reserves, it looks like the guys I might have speculated on at that point, Shelby Miller and Tyler Anderson, were taken just before Shields. So
yeah, Shelby Miller was, I believe Miller was the guy who I was going to take, and I got I had to move further down my list.
Yeah, and again, that's
whether that's true or not.
Yeah, I mean, again, that's the mixed only thing. Like, you know, in mixed, you want guys, or even Shields, you kind of laugh at a little bit. You kind of want that upside where, you know, and you don't want to take a boring guy like Bartolo Colon, where it's like, okay, like I get it. You know, maybe Colon was drafted, but you know what I mean? Like a guy like Colon, you're like, okay, like, and he was taking the third round of the reserves, but he's just boring. Like there's just not much more he's going to do than what he's already done. Whereas someone like Shields or Miller, you know, if they put it all together and figure it out, they could be, you know, someone who you stick in your staff or at least stream. So, you know, I'm not trying to say Miller or Shields is someone I'm recommending, but you get the idea. Like, mix is just a different ballgame. So to kind of pivot and conclude here, I mean, what do you think of the team? Do you think you bought a competitor? Do you like the way it shook out?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty pleased with it. I think the pitching staff is going to give me some agita, but you know, I'm used to having a pitching staff that gives me some agita. I think I'm really happy with my offense, and I haven't run this through any either internal or external simulations or anything. I had someone tell me on Twitter, I don't remember who it was, that my offense was projected to be the best in the league and my pitching was projected to kind of stink, and I was like, yeah, that sounds about right. But if one or two of these guys break right, I can make this pitching staff work, and that's all I can ask for. You never come away from an auction with a perfect offense and perfect pitching staff, so
right.
especially not in the room that we were in.
Well, and generally speaking, you're better off doing what you did in a mixed and, you know, going like 209-51 as opposed to going 140-120, because you can make up that pitching. You can't make up the hitting if you skimp on that. So, yeah, I like your team. You know, I like what you did, and I particularly like what you did on offense. Your offense looks like it could be amazing. I don't remember how much trading there is in Tout Mix, you know, besides Fred Zinke, who makes a trade every day.
There's a lot. I think Fred rubs off on all of us. There is actually quite a bit of trading that goes on in the mix.
Yeah. George, did you have anything to add before we segue into my auction?
Well, I really like the six anchors, as you called them, Brett. I mean, obviously, anytime you can build around bets, but I think the guy at the end of the day that's going to, yeah, I don't like to use the term make or break, but I end up defaulting to it. But George Springer, to me, leading off for what could be the best offense in baseball this year in Houston, I mean, there's so much talent up and down that lineup. And if he decides he's going to run more, you're looking at a guy who could be a 30-30 guy, and it's not unrealistic. So I like the George Springer pick. I like that one. I like the team overall. Strasburg, there's always going to be questions about, but it's a good staff. We didn't even talk about John Lackey. You know, you have guys who can anchor, and then the three pitchers that you sort of rolled the dice on there, like a guy like Matt Harvey, if he turns it around and he's healthy, the velocity's back, which was up in his last start, this could be a really good team. So I liked it. Good job, Brett.
Thanks, George.
All right. So, hey, real quick, we're going to talk about Mike's team. But first, Mike and I recorded a little preview of his Tout Wars draft coming up. We talked about some of the changes he's made to his strategy. So we're going to play that for you right now. So let's take a jump back in time to preview Mike's team. And then we're going to come back and talk about what actually went down. So we'll be right back here on Flags Fly Forever. Recording this about, oh, I don't know, a week before the draft now, a little bit inside of that. Tout Wars coming up this weekend. George Bissell, Mike Gianella. It's going to be a good one, Mike. How excited are you on a scale of 1 to 10 right now?
8.5. I'm pretty excited, and you probably know some years it's not that I'm not excited, but I'm like, oh, you know, like I've done this before. You know, I won in 2015, but there's something about winning and then not winning where I'm really pushing a little bit more this year and really want to like get back in the winner's circle.
Yeah, like you said, last year was a little bit different because you're kind of on the defensive going in. You know everybody's coming after you in that type of a draft. So I think that type of situation's a little bit intimidating going in.
Yeah, they really, I mean, you know, they really did come after me. Like, people were, in past years, people were bidding against Tristan or just doing their own thing. This year, people really were pushing me on players I was going after. Or, I'm sorry, last year. And, yeah, it made a difference. And, you know, it's one of the reasons, this is kind of a good segue, why, as opposed to just doing what I always do and mostly bidding for value, I've come up with a bit of a strategy this year that I kind of wanted to talk about.
Yeah, so take me through some of the key points of that, because like you said, you've traditionally gone into these drafts and said, I'm willing to take the values wherever they fall, and I'll build my team that way. But this time it looks like you're changing things up a little bit, especially on the pitching side. So what are some of the key points to focus on?
Okay, well, the thing I'll start with, so the last 2 years in Tout, I've spent, I think, between, I spent 90 or so the year I won in 2015. I spent close to 100 last year on pitching. And there's nothing wrong with that. And actually, last year in Tout, even though I spent 160 on offense, I drafted the second best offense coming out of the auction. Only Todd Zola, who won, had more points. But you know, I could have done even better on offense for one. But then the bigger problem is there were so many wasted investments on the pitching side. You know, Adam Wainwright. I go through a whole list. It's kind of painful. Like Shelby Miller were the two big ones. But yeah. You just kind of lose some bang for your buck when you're spending that much money on pitching, because it's almost like you're adding risk to what's a risky pool. So what I've decided to do is I decided to do something that I never do, which is kind of allocate money, not so much for pitchers, but for what I'm going to spend. So the plan this year is to spend, I'd say, about 65 on pitching. It might be 5 higher, it might be 5 lower, depending on how it goes. But it's not simply going to be price enforcing and saying, well, okay, you know, if Kenta Maeda's, you know, at 17 and my price is 17, I'm not going to go a dollar higher. It's going to be slotting in about $40 or $45 for two starters. It's going to be slotting in about 15 to 20 for two relievers, hopefully closers, and then the rest of it's going to be $1 or $2 guys who are going to be really low end. And I'm planning on populating my reserve with all pitchers. So the plan is to kind of stream. We all know that your pitching staff doesn't begin the way it ends. So the plan is to kind of stream, use a reserve list, use a disable list, and be really aggressive to go with those top two pitchers.
You know, what I'd be really interested is what you think the other experts are going to do, because when you won the league, you had Goldschmidt and Kershaw, and you ended up with a lot of everyday players. It's stars and scrubs, but you got really dependable scrubs. Do you see owners doing that this year, because I feel like that's the direction it's going to go. Because if you can get a Kershaw or a Goldschmidt or one of those elite players, it really sets you off on a good path. Do you think we're going to see a lot of that in the draft?
I do, although to point out, so Goldschmidt, the year I won in 2015, he went for 37. And last year, you know, Bryce Harper went for 45. Paul Goldschmidt went for 43. The prices on the Stars were higher last year. So you are correct that if that trend continues, and usually tout kind of follows labor.
Yeah.
So if that trend continues and the prices on the Stars are higher, which we did see in labor again this year, I do agree. And that's kind of the thing I want to balance. So by targeting about $195 on my hitting, and this again goes back to not being so price dependent, I'm building in a little flexibility where if I see one top hitter like at par and who I like, I'm not going to say, okay, well, you know, Paul Goldschmidt's at, you know, 40. My price on him is 40. And these aren't even my price for OBP, but, you know, right, just hypothetically, mm-hmm, I'm going to stop, you know, at 40. I'm going to look at it like, well, you know what? I want Paul Goldschmidt, or I want to make the guy bidding against me feel the pain of paying for him. And this is another thing, too, where valuation's really good, but I think by this point, enough people read me, enough people know who I am, or they see I'm coming. And I think we've talked about this before. It's kind of like when you're a poker player and you never bluff. And it's like, all right, well, this guy has a good hand or this guy has a bad hand. In this case, it's like, well, I have Mike's valuations and I remember most of them from his site, or I have an idea of what he's going to do. So I'm just going to bid him up, or, you know, I'm just going to, you know, get to my price and beat him. This offers me a little bit of wiggle room where someone might be like, wait, you know, Mike's going higher on this guy, or Mike's not bidding on this guy. And I kind of like that. I know people aren't completely focused on my auction because it's a fast-paced environment and I'm the same way. Mm. But there's a little bit of that, particularly from, you know, a few of the smarter guys in the room. You know, I've been in town now. This will be my, oh my gosh, this is eighth year. I'm really becoming like one of the senior people in tout and just like in real life.
But, emphasis on senior.
Yes. Thank you, George. So I walked right into that one with my walker.
Sorry.
But that's okay. So I kind of know when you're in a league long enough, whether it's a home league or an expert league, you know what people are going to do. Like you get familiar with them, and tout has been pretty stable. Ray Guilfoyle of Fake Teams left. So there's one owner changing, but for the most part, I look at it like, well, you know, I know what Tristan's going to do. I know what Todd Zola's going to do. It's just good to take that to advantage. Now, the other piece of this too, and the reason I decided to do this, it is the pitching environment. Like if you look at the pitching, and Derek Carty identified this in his labor write-up, which came out last Wednesday, well, tomorrow as I'm talking the moment, but when you listen, it's last Wednesday. After the few top pitchers, the pool really drops off, and the differentiation, it's not even that the pitchers are bad so much, it's that the differentiation between like the third and fourth starters in your fantasy team and NL only, and like your bottom tier guys, they aren't really significant enough to go out there and say, like Robbie Ray is a good example, whether you like him or not, like to push him to 11 or 12, even in an only, it's like, yeah, I don't really know if I want to do that. And yeah, he could turn into a $20, $25 pitcher. Like last year, that guy was Kyle Hendricks. Mm. But more often than not, those pitchers just don't work. Or at best, they kind of bring back what a free agent or, you know, a cheap guy like Jeremy Hellickson or Bartolo Colon brought back last year.
But I just think we tend to – well, how much of this do you think is an actual trend that we should be buying? Or is this just sort of like a blip on the radar and things could reverse this year? Because we always talk about being cautious of taking too much away from trends year to year and overreacting to stuff. So do you think that it's warranted to be that concerned about the crop of pitchers after the elite tier?
Well, it's difficult to predict because pitching in general is difficult to predict.
Right.
I'd say the answer is – I know it sounds like a cop-out, but the answer is somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
I do think that the pitchers at the top, there's more differentiation. This goes back to 2015 when you had Kershaw and you had Arrieta and you had Zach Greinke, who I know, you know, faded last year. The pitchers at the top in the NL, and especially compared to the AL – really do have the capacity to earn much more than the guys in the middle. It's not even so much the guys in the middle or at the bottom are bad. it's more that like in the AL, the top guy typically earns like 30, 35, somewhere in there. The NL, the last few years, you know, first was just Kershaw, but now we've seen Scherzer. Now we saw it. We saw an Arrieta in 2015. There's guys earning 35 or more. And, you know, you look at those names at the top and, you know, there's Kershaw, there's Scherzer, there's Bumgarner, you know, there's Syndergaard, and then a little bit below them, there's Cueto, there's Lester, there's Arrieta, you know, maybe there's Hendricks and Strasburg, depending how far down you want to go there. But after those guys, you know, maybe Martinez and Maeda, there's a drop. Like, there's definitely a drop off to, I'd say, after the top 15, when you look at the guys and go, well, this guy might be a solid member of my staff, but I have no faith in him like breaking into the top tier. He just doesn't have the ability or the stuff.
Yeah, that's a really great point. You talked about this in your retrospective valuations write-up as well for the NL, that this was especially apparent, that just the gap between those aces and the rest of the pool is wider than it's been in recent years. So definitely something to watch for. We talk a little bit about players that you like relative to what you think everyone else will value them at. Is there anyone like that for you this year that really stands out as someone that you feel pretty confident you're going to end up getting because of how you value them?
Looking at the guy who jumps out to me is Asdrubal Cabrera. My bid limit on him is 19, and I might drop that a little bit for OBP.
That is high.
It is high, but I really like him. I agree. I think the you agree. I like him, or you agree it's high?
No, I agree. I like him. Look at some of the names he's near. There's no guarantees with guys like Baez, Diaz, Crawford, Arcia. Like Cabrera's really, really good. He went for
13 in labor, and my bid's 19. So even if I knock down a couple bucks for OBP, I think I'll get him.
Yeah.
Let's see. As Addison Russell, somebody else I'm kind of high on, who I suspect I might wind up with. You know, one thing about Tout that's interesting is because there's seven or eight different owners, It's just sort of like Scott Wildman, for example, someone who's hard to predict, and Phil Hertz is someone who's kind of hard to predict. The other on the pitching side, Cueto's the guy. He went for 22 in CBS. He went for 22 in labor. My bid on him is 26. I'm pretty confident I'm going to walk away with Cueto. But again, we'll see. You know, the one nice thing about what I'm doing, like I said, is normally a pitcher, I cut back a little bit more on those bids.
Yeah.
So if I've got Cueto at a 26, I might be like, all right, well, he's at 24. Do I want to say 25? You know, this year it's going to be like, if it's the time of the auction, I feel like, you know what, he's the guy, I'm going to say 25 and just not worry about it.
Yeah, we saw that in the Labor NL draft, that some of these guys didn't get pushed as far as we thought they would. And that's just something we talked about with Steve. You know, guys like Cueto, Lester, Syndergaard, Bumgarner, they really went at or a little bit below what you have in your bid limits. So I think you do have an opportunity to be aggressive here.
Yeah, keep in mind, though, Labor is more conservative than Tout on the pitching side. So this year, I think the pitchers in Labor cost $894 total. And last year it was $903. I have the $894 number in front of me. Of the $903, I'm guessing. In Tout, it was about $950 or $960 last year. So I think there'll be a similar bump. And that's where it's kind of tough. You think more money go to the hitters because of OBP, but really what winds up happening, that's top hitters get paid more, and it's the guys in the middle and toward the bottom that really get dinged. So, yeah, I can't say for sure I'm getting any of those pitchers, but I suspect, like, I'm looking at combinations. Unless Scherzer falls in my lap, I really want to avoid, like, paying over 30 for him because of the $45 limit I have.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm kind of looking more at, like, a combination, something like, say, John Lester and Kyle Hendricks, for example. Johnny Cueto and Jacob deGrom, who I'm really starting to get sucked into Brett's thinking on him. Those are kind of the combinations. There's others, but those are kind of the combinations I'm looking at to get two guys for about 45 and go from there.
Yeah, Jacob deGrom's value has just kind of shot up here in the last few weeks since he's looked good in the spring. So I'm less optimistic on you being able to get him. So
I agree. I think Kenta Maeda might be a better target for me just because there isn't as much helium around him than there is deGrom.
Cool. Any final thoughts here and before we depart?
No, it's just that, you know, it's a tough room, and I think there's a we know things are not going to go the way I predict. It'll be interesting if we come out of this and you're like, so, Mike, you spent 100 on pitching again. Or, so, you missed out on all the aces and you spent 220 on hitting. You know, it'll be fun either way.
I'm excited. So, Mike, good luck. And we're going to now move back to the present, if you're listening to this podcast. I don't know. I never know how to transition this. So, all right, back to the future. All right, so we're back here on Flags Fly Forever. This has been a fun one so far. We are recapping the Tout Wars auctions from New York City last weekend, and we're going to discuss Mike's NL-only team. This league is insane. If you look at some of the competitors on the NL side, I mean, this is a stacked room. So Brett is going to grill Mike about how he executed his strategy, which we just talked about earlier. So Brett, take it away.
All right, so we'll do the sort of reverse of what we did with me, and we'll start with the end and go backwards. Factoring in what your plan was heading into the auction and how everything played out ahead of you, how pleased were you with the team that you put together when you got up from that table?
Well. You know how this goes. When you first get up, you're kind of like you're overwhelmed. It goes so quickly. You're kind of tired. So, and you're always thinking about one or two things you could have done differently. But I would say the next day when I looked at what I'd done, I'd say I was pretty pleased. And I said this at the end of the article, which is I executed the plan. I put the team together that I wanted to put together. It's a strong offense. The only offense that projects better according to Baseball HQ's projections is Phil Hertz, and he is, Baseball HQ, so I assume he was using his own projections. And the pitching projects out the way, I wanted it to, which is, 38 points, first in saves, first in ERA, first in whip, last in wins and strikeouts. And, we'll kind of talk about this as we go on. I talked about this in the preview with George, but that's the idea, which is to put that baseline together for less money than you would, if you spent 80 to 85 on your staff, which is what most people do.
Yeah. So let's start by talking about the pitching, because you definitely had a more fleshed out plan for pitching than you did in previous years. So are you happier that you got that you ended up with those two aces being sort of the safer ratio guys than I think some of the other starters you might have been looking at? Not that someone like Jake Arrieta is bad at all, but I think you could make the argument that that Cueto and Hendricks are both. While they might not quite have the upside of Jake Arrieta, they are a bit safer, and I think that that kind of ended up fitting your strategy well. So was that something you aimed to do, or were they just happened to be the guys that fell into your lap?
That was mostly what I aimed to do. I went through a number of scenarios, and George could tell you, and I think he's getting tired of hearing this from me. I was running through combinations of two starters I might get, and I kept coming back to either Cueto and Hendricks or Lester and Hendricks. Lester and Cueto, based on what happened in labor, which is I was using as the price baseline, might have been too expensive. But I suspected I'd get the two of them for two reasons. One was what you point out, Brett, which is their ERA and WHIP are pretty solid, pretty reliable, helped out by their skills, helped out in both cases, in Cueto's case by the park, in both cases, and in Hendricks' case especially by the defense behind them. And it's amazing to me, as great as the Cubs' defense was and as many smart people have written about it, there's still some analysts writing off what happened as bad luck and regression. And I pointed this out in the article, which is, if Hendricks regresses, that defense behind him, he's still going to put up like a 1.15 or 1.18 in WHIP, and he's probably going to put up an ERA in the low threes. And he's a good pitcher. He's not Clayton Kershaw or Max Scherzer, but he's a solid next level guy. The other thing I was looking at, and this is why I passed on Arrieta, I didn't want to pay for strikeouts. So you know, Noah Syndergaard went for 26, and he went a few picks after Cueto. That's a really good price for Noah Syndergaard, in my opinion. And if I were playing an $85 staff and I got Cueto with the third player overall, I'd be like, oh, you know, I really wish I'd gotten Syndergaard, you know, and I, you know, you can never go back and fix these things. But with this plan, you're like, I got the guy I wanted. I got the guy who fits my plan, and I'm not paying excess money for a category that I know I'm not going to compete in.
Then the closers. So sort of, you know, I know you, I don't think you were really anticipating coming out with two closers, but you know, the prices on Watson and Familia, I thought were pretty great, especially compared to what the high end was going for in there. How confident are you in that pair? And were you surprised that they went for as little as they did, or did you kind of get the feeling they would once the first couple of closers came out?
So to work this backwards, I was a little surprised. That was about what they both went for in labor. Watson went for a dollar more. Familia went for the same price. But in the past, closers and tout have gone for about a dollar or two more each on average. But Craig Mish was new to the league this year, and it turned out he was dumping saves, and three teams dumped saves. Had I known that, I might have passed on Watson. That's kind of where I have the regret, not because I don't believe in Watson, but because there were some really screwy prices later. What the plan was to get, you know, one $10 closer and one $5 or $6 closer, like kind of a really back-end guy like Rodney, like you did in the mix. And, you know, once I got Watson, and once I got a little stretch on Cueto and Hendricks at a combined 41 instead of 45, I was like, okay, I've got a little more money on closers. So I should have passed on Familia in theory and said, you know what, I'll let someone else get him. But I just saw him sitting there at 10, and it's like, I just can't pass on this guy. Even if he only, you know, if he's suspended, which we all expect he will be, and it's a 30-game suspension, which seems to be the precedent set by Aroldis Chapman last year, 132 games of Familia on that team and with what he's done, that looks like a big value to me. And a lot of the people commenting on Twitter and on the Facebook Live had that same feeling of, like, you know, Familia, even with missing 30 games, was one of the better closer values out there.
So let's go to the question that everyone's probably dying for you to answer. What's up with all the rookies?
it's funny you say that, because yeah, I typically really go veteran heavy, as people know, and you know, AL Labor is a good example of that, where you have Ian Kinsler and Melky Cabrera and Victor Martinez, and you guys and other people poke fun at me for, you know, buying these old, you know, teams that are solid but kind of boring and reliable. Yeah, and you go up and down the line with my NL Town team, even the veterans, you know, Ryan Braun, I believe, is the oldest or one of the oldest players on this team. And it's not like Ryan Braun is a gray beard. You know, he's like, what, 32, 33, you know, somewhere in there. Some of this was just price. So at shortstop, the younger guy I was looking at wasn't Dansby Swanson, or the guys at short I thought I'd get based on CBS and labor. I got these guys in CBS were Trevor Story and Addison Russell. But Steve Gardner was pushing Story early on, and he got him for 26. And Lenny Melnick, you guys know how Lenny is. He'll pretty much get his guys. He got Russell for 22, and I looked at both those players. I'm like, you know what? I don't want to push on people. Swanson's someone I was sure would go for 17, 18, 19. When he fell at 16, I was like, okay, I got Dansby Swanson. He's a solid player. You know, same thing with the next player. I got eight players there in the auction, Manuel Margot at 11. And then a little bit later, you know, a couple rounds later, Hunter Renfro at 9. I believe in all three of them, particularly Swanson and Margot. And you mentioned this in the mix. It was kind of odd that people weren't really pushing rookies the way that they used to. And my feeling about this is that last year, after 2015 and the year of the rookie, people were overcompensating and paying them too much. There was an error bar the other way. Even Trey Turner, who I mentioned before, Trey Turner went for 30 to Gray Albright of Razzball, I was kind of wondering, and it's an OBP league, but I was kind of wondering, you know, maybe I should have said 31, and, you know, I didn't, but it almost seemed that people in the room in general were pushing the other way. And you guys know how I am. I tend to go where the value is. And I feel like with all three of those players, and, you know, maybe not Swanson, maybe he's just a par guy, but there's value in all three of them potentially, you know, even if they just perform. And the other side of this is the floor. Like, Dansby Swanson, if he goes out there and gets 550 plate appearances and is just kind of hits an empty 270, and an only, that's like a $12 player, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah, and he's not going to do that either.
But no, he isn't. But I'm saying if for some reason he's disappointed, he goes through a couple of weird slumps, and, you know, hits 270 and only hits like, you know, 8 home runs and only steals 10 bases. You know, we know what that's worth in only.
That was going to be my exact point, is that a guy like Swanson gets undervalued because he doesn't have that huge carrying tool. It's not power or speed. It's kind of across the board. I've used the phrase "sum of the whole is greater than the sum of the parts" kind of profile on him. So, like, yeah, you're right. He could easily return this. And
I feel like Swanson is the NL version of Benintendi, but for some reason doesn't have the. I mean, for this year only. I don't want to get into a long-term argument, but he doesn't quite have the same hype that Benintendi has for this year.
No.
Yeah, well, I mean, we won't get into the whole Benintendi hype and other players who should have the same hype. We'll get into that, I'm sure, as the season progresses. But, I think the Padres outfield is really interesting because they have the opportunity to give these guys, and I'm talking specifically about Renfro and Margot, kind of all the playing time they can handle. And if they're the kind of guys where Renfro with his power and Margot with his speed, if they get to 400 plate appearances, they're going to they're pretty likely to return value for you. And that's not, you know, and it's sort of once an argument, but to an even greater extent, even though they're slightly less guaranteed playing time than Swanson is, but they have more fantasy carrying tools than Swanson does. You know, right. Margot could steal 25 bases and not play a full season, and Renfro could hit 20 home runs and not play a full season. I mean, they could crater outside of those numbers, but those numbers still carry a lot of value.
Yeah, I agree.
So let's we'll keep it quick on this one because I know we've talked about him a lot, but give me 15 seconds on why I'm right about Yasmani Grandal.
Well, and it only in particular the catching pool is thin in NL only, and you know, you mess about these Padres, but if Grandal only gets 450 plate appearances, he can still earn 17. And he just needs to avoid that month where he slumps. If he doesn't do that and he's consistent all year, he hits 30 home runs.
I'm with you. So my last question, you know, Daniel Murphy is kind of a little bit of a polarizing player this year. You have I believe it's real camp versus the he's still Daniel Murphy camp. What do you think his on-base percentage, his batting average, and his number of home runs will be at the end of 2017?
I the power is legitimate. The average slips, and I alluded to this in the article, so I'm going to guess he hits 310. He gets on base about 35% of the time, and he hits like 20 to 22 home runs.
I like it.
Mike, real quick, Starling Marte, you got him for $30. We talked about him when we had Steve Gardner on the show, and Steve was, I believe he got him in labor, so it was kind of...
He did.
What was that interaction like, and were you doing cartwheels when you got him for 30? Because I thought that was a really nice price.
You know, Steve, when Marte came up, I gave Steve a look, and, you know, Brett, you know how these auctions are because you're in them. They go really fast. You don't have time to sit there and, you know, duke it out. But Steve wasn't bidding on Marte. And, So with Yasmani Grandal to back up for a second, I pulled this with Grandal where Tristan Cockcroft, and I'm trying to remember who the second, you know, person who was bidding against Tristan was. I want to say it was Scott Wildeman of On Roto. But, you know, Tristan said 18, and I after saying nothing, I said 19 for Grandal, and Tristan kind of gave me the evil eye and then, you know, didn't say 20. I wouldn't have said 21. So this is what happened with Marte. Is I thought for sure Steve was going to say 31, you know, and instead he just sat there. I'm like, okay, I'll take Marte for 30. So, yeah, I really like Marte. You know, Billy Hamilton certainly, you know, as we've talked about him on the show, he has the higher speed ceiling, obviously. But yeah. Marte has the speed and, you know, also contributes everywhere, even a little bit in home runs. So, just a special player in real life. You know, I worry a little bit about the injuries with him, but not too much. I feel like Marte, you know, even in a bad year, is going to earn like $25.
For what it's worth, on your latest bid limits update at BP, you had him at $32. So I just thought it was funny that we were talking about Marte, and then friend of the show Steve Gardner also bought Daniel Murphy in labor. So you kind of went with the Gardner plan here on offense a little bit with those two guys, which is
funny. I did a little bit. You know, something to kind of point out about the Murphy, Marte, and Ryan Braun. I think some people get a little tripped up with OBP because all three of them are worth less in OBP than they are in average leagues. But there's a difference between that and being poorly valued. All three of them last year were above average in the category. And, you know, I kind of project out, you know, if you look at the HQ projections, I project out to having 8 points in OBP. And that's a large part of it, which is I think some people look at that the deduction and they confuse that with a player being subpar in OBP as opposed to being, well, they're still worth something. They're just not worth as much as they'd be in an average league.
I have one last thing here, and then we'll kind of wrap up. But you bought Asdrubal Cabrera, which I think we forecasted on the preview show. We saw that one
that
coming.
That was the least surprising thing about your auction. Yeah. We've talked about that plenty this offseason, and I'm with you on Asdrubal. But that is a, you know, that is a perfect example of you, targeting a player, but not targeting a player.
Exactly. Like knowing what you're going to do. Exactly. I would have bet my house on that. But the guy I want to ask you about is Jason Hayward. You bought him at $13. You said that was someone in your write-up that you weren't targeting. So why do you like him at that price? Because I think people are in two camps on Hayward. There are the people who still believe he can rebound, and then there are people who have given up on him completely. So I think you're somewhere in the middle here. But where do you stand on Hayward? And I just think this was a really interesting pick.
That's absolutely right. I don't believe you're going to see the Jason Hayward of old. And quite honestly, I've said this about Hayward. He had 1 year in his entire career where the power was really there. And I think it was with the Braves, at like 25 or 26 home runs. But Hayward's a player that when he's okay, you know, he steals some bases, he hits some home runs, he scores runs. What I'm buying with Hayward is the playing time. He's got a big contract. His defense is very valuable, and the Cubs believe that as well about him, which is why last year, even though he was absolutely, you know, awful, they just played him and played him and played him. He's going to play unless he's hurt. And last year, in the worst scenario imaginable, he earned 9 in OBP formats. So this is another example of I looked at Hayward. My raw bid on him was, I think, 15 or 16. And it's kind of like, you know what? I'm betting on a bounce back. I'm not betting on the Hayward of old. And at 13, I look at him like, well, he'll probably earn that as a par guy. And there's that 5 to 10% chance that he does bounce back and earns like 20. But realistically, I'm looking at, you know, something like 15, 16, 17 for him and a little bit of profit.
Cool. I'll ask the same question we opposed to Brett earlier, but how do you feel about the squad overall? I know you said at the end in the baseball HQ projections you're projected to finish first, and obviously you can't freeze the standings right now, but how do you feel about the team overall?
I like the team. You know, the offense and with what I spent, and given that I tracked valuation, it is fine. What's going to be interesting is the pitching, because obviously with a strategy like this, so we didn't talk about it much. So the back end guys, everyone I got on the active roster was a reliever. And with the exception of Ryan Buchter, everyone I got in reserve was a starter. But there's a good chance that a lot of these pitchers will not be on my team. So it's going to depend on how these pitchers play out. You know, I need to get lucky realistically on one or two of these relievers and have them turn into like a top or near top middle reliever. But that can happen. We all know that can happen. And that's the part I feel good about. There's some sneaky upside in this strategy. What I really need to do is hit the targets on offense coming in, and I feel like I did that, even though, you know, I got Jung Ho Kang at a buck, you know, who we don't even know if he's going to play. I got Connor Gillespie at a buck at corner. That's the one weakness of my team, is a real lack of corner infield strength. But otherwise, I really like what I did. I think it came together really well. And, you know, projections are projections. I look at projections, and Brett, tell me if you disagree. I look at them as a baseline for what you did. And so I feel like the baseline's strong. Of course, events can torpedo your team or make your team look bad. But I do know from experience, like there's two teams, and, you know, they're in the article, but I won't mention them. There's two teams that project very poorly. And generally speaking, it is hard to kind of climb out from a projection where you're that far behind the eight ball.
No, I think we did a pretty good job of covering this. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've gone for like an hour or so, and I think we, you know, if you guys have questions who are listening to this, we'll certainly, you know, answer those on Twitter or elsewhere. But yeah, this is these auctions are fun, and I feel like it's so funny. This is my eighth year in tout, and I've certainly, you know, done this even longer, but every year I learn something, and I feel like every year I get better.
Well,
yeah,
they may be fun for you guys, but to just someone who's never been in them, they look absolutely terrifying while in the moment. So it's not easy. Like watching it, even as someone who does a ton of auctions, it's pretty intimidating at first. So I thought you guys both did very well. So, all right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and wrap up the show. And we're back. Thank you for listening to episode 126 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. Subscribe today with a one-year premium membership to read all of us on baseballprospectus.com. If you sign up for a super premium membership, you get access to the Bat Signal. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter. I am at George Bissell. Brett is at Brett Sayer BP. Mike is at Mike Gianella. Don't forget to subscribe or review us on iTunes. Guys, we have baseball. When the next time we do a show, there will have been actual regular season baseball games. How exciting is that? That's awesome.
I'm very excited.
let's go Mets.
And on that note, for Brett Sayer and Mike Gianella, this is George Bissell saying so long, everybody. Enjoy opening day. We'll be back next week. Good night.
See ya.